What the Tech is sponsored by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/Andrew.
What the Tech?
Hey everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarin. Of course, I'm joined by Paul Thurrott, as I am each and every week. How are you doing, Paul?
Pretty good. How are you?
Doing good. Everybody seems to hate my beard. If you're watching live or you're watching the video podcast, I have a very impressive beard going.
Yeah, it is. It is a lush landscape of hair.
My wife hates it. She won't go out in public with me. Right. Paul hates it. He told me he won't go out in public with me, and apparently the audience hates it as well.
So obviously you intend to keep it.
I intend to keep this thing for as long as I could possibly go. You know, it makes shaving a lot easier. And after the initial couple days, you don't really feel just like the itching.
Yeah, that's what does it for me, is the itching.
Yeah, after like 3-4 days, it's fine after that. You're not really going through the itching process with the beard. But that's what we're talking about today. This Week in Beards, guys. It's a new podcast here on the GFQ Network. Couple things this week. One, I bought an Apple TV. I finally caved in.
Okay.
I was adamant to not get an Apple TV. I had said it for a long time. I wasn't going to get an Apple TV. I don't really need an Apple TV. I don't want an Apple TV because I feel like, again, it's an incomplete device. It should be doing so much more than it actually is. And, It
seems pretty good to me. I mean, I use a Roku more than it. But
see, yeah. That's the thing. I have a Roku. I have a Google TV. I don't really need it. I have a Chromecast. So that was one of the things that I really didn't need to have. And I am really against the idea that I have to hit source every time I need to go to a device. That's why the Xbox One is so appealing for me. That's why the Google TV, I'm the only one who uses Google TV. That's why I use it, because it makes it so much easier to just hit the Netflix button.
You may literally be the only one that uses Google TV.
I'm starting to think I probably am.
I mean, I have one here in my office, and I do turn it on, but I don't use it for any Google TV stuff. I just use it as a TV.
As a TV. See, there's been no updates, nothing. So, I mean, it's a dead platform, but it works. It works well. For what it does. If you're only doing Netflix and Amazon, it's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. You can't do anything else. There's no applications developed really for it in the last 2.5 years. So I bought an Apple TV because I want to start using AirPlay. And I had found an app for Google, Google TV, that would do AirPlay from my iPad or my computer. It stopped working. Something changed and it didn't work. So we'd like to AirPlay some stuff. It didn't work. I finally caved in. I had a couple drinks. I ordered Apple TV, set it up. I have to tell you, Paul, I don't get the hype with it. So it's still early. It's only been a couple days that I've had it. I don't know why anybody would choose the Apple TV over the Roku.
Oh, well, because they're Apple guys. I mean, that's it.
I mean, there's AirPlay, obviously. Obviously, if you use AirPlay.
I don't even think it's AirPlay. It's just... people buy a lot of content from Apple, and when you do that, you can access it all from the Apple TV, and that works really well. So if you bought a bunch of movies or music or whatever, that stuff is all there, and that's why you do it. And you know, it does have Netflix. You know,
okay. So does everything else.
Okay, but if you're an Apple guy and you want that too, that there you're done. You know, that's everything you need in one box.
I don't like their Netflix layout. It drives me crazy with the menu button. You got to constantly hit the menu button to go back.
Apple, you know, they're always biting themselves in the foot They're always.
I mean, I would actually pay to see them do that.
Just let that one. We're gonna let that one slide. with the navigational stuff, you know, they don't have a back button on the phone, and yes, that remote is ridiculous.
It's awful, right? The remote is. I'm not the only one that can't use it.
It is literally ridiculous. It seems designed not to fit well in any hand. You know, it's like this weird combination of like super thin and, you know, not very wide. It's very strange.
I mean, before all the Apple guys and start telling me that I'm an idiot and I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm an Apple guy. I mean, I use my laptop as a MacBook. I have an iPad. I'm in the Apple world, so it's not like I'm a Windows guy.
I tolerate you because of this. But
I know. I mean, you only like me because I could actually drink. the Pinot Gris and the Mac. I'm a little eh.
I almost forwarded you a story from the New York Times that said that Pinot Grigio was apparently like the most embarrassing wine to be seen.
It probably is.
They're actually trying to market it to fix that problem. Anyway, but go on.
It's so yummy, though. Oh, yummy yes. Pinot Grigio. But so I'm in the Apple world. I'm using this thing, and I'm thinking, what am I missing? Okay, fine. I don't download movies from iTunes, so okay, that's part of it, right?
No, but see, the problem is you're thinking about it. You know, most people who buy this thing don't care or think about it. They just, I have a Mac and or an iPad. I have an iPhone. I spent $1,500 on content, and there it is. And you know that this thing may have navigational problems compared to a Roku device or anything else that's ever been made, or you know, whatever. It doesn't have the same exact services. Like, these people don't really care. And because it just works with the stuff that they care about, you know?
I guess, like, but I mean, Apple's
no
known.
No one makes this kind of decision. Like, I'm not an Apple guy. Should I get an Apple TV or a Roku? Like, that's not even a question. If you're not an Apple guy, you don't get an Apple TV. There's no reason to get an Apple TV.
And talking about the interface, you know, Apple is known to have a good understanding of what users want when it comes to that. It's atrocious. I mean, it really is. And I know it's, you know, they have this grand vision for Apple TV, and the odds are, by me saying this, the next version that'll come out soon will be everything that I want it to be. And that's one of the main reasons why I fell out.
I think it's great that you bought it just for that reason, by the way.
What?
I think you're guaranteeing that we will be getting a new version.
Yeah. No, I know that for a fact. I know that for a fact that I'm buying this thing and they're going to announce the new Apple TV and they're going to have the game playing and all that stuff. And you know what? I'll give this one away to somebody. All this crap that Google TV got, for example, all this garbage, everybody hates Google TV. The UI, to me, is far more simple for someone that has a Google TV than it is for someone that has Apple TV. And the Roku UI, by far, it's not even a comparison.
Yeah, sure.
That Roku is a far better device.
It's a tough thing to compare because Apple is the originator of everything that they intend to do, if that makes sense. In other words, when you buy a Roku device, Roku doesn't sell services. Roku puts services from other companies on there. So when you run Roku, you're going to run the Netflix app or the Amazon app or whatever app you care to mention, HBO Go, whatever. And essentially, that's what you're doing. So I bet to my wife, like, she doesn't even think of it as a Roku. She thinks of it as Netflix, you know, I would imagine.
Sure.
On the Apple device, you know, Apple sells all this content. And so they divide the UI up into their stuff. And so it's like movies, TV shows, music, you know, whatever else they have. And then they have a menu, you know, not a menu, but like a grid of icons, as you would expect. And they kind of top load it with all their stuff. And then there's a couple of things in there, like Netflix and whatever.
Yeah, I mean, and by the way, they have the ABC app, they have HBO Go, they have, I forgot the other one, CBS.
It's not like it used to be. Like, it used to be nothing, and now there's actually third-party apps in there. You can do it, and you can get rid of some stuff that Apple puts in there, but not all of it. The problem is, like, if you, you know, if you go into the movie section, I'm just doing it off the top of my head, but, you know, it's heavily tilted toward store stuff. You know, they want you to rent something or buy something. And, you know, if you have a movie collection of your own and you want to get into your stuff, I mean, a couple of those things might be highlighted on the front page there, but you have to kind of go into a menu and go find it. And that's because, you know, Apple is the company, you know, Apple sells all this stuff too. They're not making a box for you to buy. They're giving you a box or selling you a box because you've already bought into this ecosystem and they want you to bump into that stuff. I'm sure Amazon has plans to come up with something that will do exactly the same thing. Google is, you know, Google has their own thing, which is heavily tilted to their own stuff. Microsoft has an Xbox 360. I mean, it's...
What's interesting about the Apple stuff is that they have this vast ecosystem of games that are known by the consumer, and they have all these applications. Maybe somebody could help me understand, or maybe you could. I just don't understand why it's taking them this long to bring those things over. It's been such a slow, tedious process for them to add applications to this, you know, device.
I could only guess, but to give Apple a little bit of credit, I would say that they don't tend to do things that are half-assed, and they just haven't found a good user experience. I don't know if you've ever spent time doing this, but Roku 2 or 3, whichever version, they started selling games with the system.
Roku 2, yeah.
And they bundle some kind of Angry Birds game with it. And so, you know, you get this thing and you put it in your living room and you can use the remote like a kind of a Nintendo controller. You hold it sideways. And you play a game on it. And you're like, yeah, look at that. It works. And then you realize this isn't that fun. And then you kind of never do it again. And I think that Apple is trying to avoid that. Like, what they don't want is to release something that doesn't get supported, because they have these really successful platforms all running on iOS. And it would be horrible for them to make something like on iOS that failed, like Google TV did for Google. And I think the Roku thing did. TiVo has an app platform that no one really supports.
And apparently it's pretty good.
I'm sure it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure it is. But, you know, it doesn't matter how good it is if no one supports it. And I think Apple's concern is that the user experience be really good and, you know, that they have the support up front that they need to make it look, you know, like a viable.
I mean, do you think the ultimate, you know, solution for these type devices is being integrated in the television? Like we was talking about a couple of weeks ago, Roku's going to be integrated on some LG TVs and some other TVs. Is that where they want to be, or do they still want?
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. I mean, it's kind of like saying, you know, an iMac type computer where you bundle the screen into the box of the computer is like the ultimate computer. But, you know, when the screen goes or you want to upgrade the guts, you are throwing the whole thing out. Likewise, when you bundle the stuff into a TV, you're stuck with whatever that hardware is, right? It's never going to be upgraded. You might be able to upgrade the apps over the air. But the hardware is stuck in time.
Yeah.
That's a problem. You know. Whereas a new Apple TV comes out tomorrow, a new Roku, I can plug it into my existing TV and suddenly everything's better. So there are kind of pros and cons to both approaches.
I honestly think that the pass-through is a way to do it. And, I mean, I people say, well, it's because they're not able to strike a deal with the cable providers, but I don't think it has anything to do with that. I don't see how it has to incorporate the cable providers. If the pass-through piggybacks and you get the interface overlaying over your television, That's what people want. They don't want to switch. And you get a new interface with your TV every you know, year or so.
Sure. I don't know. I mean, I you know, TV purchases are very different from, I don't know, iPad purchases in a way. Actually, they're not that different. They're about the same cost. But, you know, I people tend to buy these little personal devices frequently, whereas I think people buy a TV and they leave it there until it
How
dies.
Often do you think people are buying TVs now? I think it's much quicker than it used to be, but yeah, what do you think?
That is absolutely correct, but it's not because something happened that caused someone to want a new thing. It's because the TV dies. So in the old days, like 30 years ago, you could buy a TV. That TV still works today. But if you bought a TV 5 or 6 years ago, chances are pretty good that TV doesn't work anymore, you know, and that's how those upgrades occur. And I think we talked about this at some point, you know, in the last year. The first HD TV that we bought was very expensive. We bought a service plan, never needed it, and then the thing died as soon as the service plan was out. The next one, we bought something really cheap, and the theory is, and by the way, really cheap, but it looks fantastic. When it dies, it dies. It's already lasted longer than I think it needed to for it to have been worth it for me. I'll buy a new one when it dies. And it will die because it's a Vizio and those things, you know, I can't. This is not like the awesome quality TV sets or electronics we used to buy a long time ago. This is like a modern, I don't know if it's Korean or whatever it is, you know, piece of junk. And that's, you know, that's what this stuff is. So
no, I mean, that's a market. And someone in the chat says, I want to get a TV, but I don't want that the smart TV stuff. You could still do that. And I think that's a great part of it. Most of these TVs are all the same, but they just add more crap to it. So you'll get the same exact picture on, you know, the lower end. Let's say, like, I have a 65-inch in my bedroom. We just got a new one. I think my wife paid under $1,000 for it, for a 65-inch TV. Doesn't have any of the smart stuff. The picture quality is stellar. It's very high-end display. But doesn't have any smart applications, and it only has two HDMI ports. And because of that, it's $1,000. If they have the same exact TV with the smart apps and with another HDMI, and you're paying an extra $500 or $600 for it. You don't really need the smart apps if you have an Xbox One, for example. You just piggyback right off of that.
Sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, there are options, but I was just wondering, you know, the average person, how many are you replacing 55-inch TVs every 3 years? I don't think that's happening. You replace them when they die.
No, maybe you're right, but that may be every 4 to 5 years. You know, my friend, or you know, he's passed along now, but. I had a friend who bought one of the first VHS cassette tape players. It was so old that it was like a top loader, right?
Yeah.
You know, most people who think about VHS, you think about popping it in the front, but the first ones, it was like were like top loading. That thing still works.
And how much? How much did he pay? It's about $1,200.
I mean, sure, it was a lot of money back in the day. But you know that those kinds of things are a more mechanical, I guess. And they just, you know, they were just built to a higher level of quality. I mean, it was like a refrigerator, a dishwasher, a clothes washer. You would buy this thing and you would have it for a long time.
I know people that are buying homes now, and the house is still coming with like the dishwasher and the washing machine that it had 35 years ago. Still there.
Right.
You know, and I've had to change mine twice already over the last 10 years.
We still have our original furnace from the 1960s, and that's actually starting to be a problem. So every winter, I think this is going to be the end of that. But, you know, there's something that lasts, you know, again, it's a silly, sure, simple mechanical thing. But
comes down to build quality.
I don't buy anything, and really, I'd have to really think about that as I say it. But I don't buy much with the expectation that it's going to last. I mean, I buy a laptop knowing that maximum from someone like me, 2 years max, you know, that I'm going to use this thing. You know, an Xbox. I'm trying to look around what I have. You know, like a phone. How long are you really going to have a phone? How long are people who listen to this podcast really going to own that phone?
Probably
two years. is the max. But I bet a lot of people upgrade sooner than that.
I'm noticing, you know, more and more people upgrading. Yeah, I I'm surprised at that, because I'm one of these people that doesn't upgrade. Even though I'm in this, you know, field, I still stand by my phone for 2 years. If I get a phone, that's what I'm getting. I don't really care to upgrade. I mean, I've reviewed stuff. I buy stuff to review, but my everyday phone is always the phone that I got for my plan. Yeah. And you know what? It starts getting a little long in the tooth a year and a half in, but 6 more months, I just get a new phone and that's it. I'm fine with it. But I am noticing a lot of my friends within the first year, they'll upgrade again. They'll get something. They'll pay out of pocket. It's interesting. We're becoming this society that disposes of these things when really we could get another year or two out of them. We're choosing to get rid of them rather than it dying on us.
Yes, and so yeah, in the case of personal electronics, yeah.
I want to talk. You brought up Amazon and how they may be entering the market, and apparently they are. There are a lot of rumors. Oh, it's been going on for a while, but it seems like it's going to happen. They're going to release a console. I don't know if I necessarily would call it a console, but it's going to be a set-top box sitting in a living room that's going to play Android games on there. It's going to have pretty much everything that all these other devices have.
Well, that's why they're calling it a console, you know, because it's going to play games.
But is it really? In other words,
it's not just a Roku. Well, I'm just saying that's probably why they're using that language. If they're going to base it on Android and have some kind of an app store type platform that supports whatever style of interaction you're going to have with this device. I mean, they're positioning it a bit as sort of an entry level game system as well. So, you know, I've always expected Amazon to do this kind of thing. I expect Amazon to make a phone. Every day that goes by, I'm surprised this stuff hasn't happened, because obviously the window kind of closes on it. But they have all that stuff. I mean, they have an incredible back-end ecosystem. Why wouldn't they do this?
And they could afford to take a loss on the hardware, because they're relying on you to use their ecosystem. And most people do.
Yep.
People
will be using this thing to buy stuff from Amazon.
I started, Paul, for the first time a couple weeks ago, I bought something on Amazon Prime for the video on demand stuff. I've had a Prime account, so I've always watched stuff that's free. But it's pretty limited, right? The stuff that you actually want to see, you have to pay for. I bought Archer. Mm-hmm. I bought Archer Season 4.
Yep.
I loved it. It was simple, easy. And now I bought another season. I bought something else. So I've spent about $60 on there in the last couple of weeks just buying stuff.
Yeah, and that's what they rely on. Yeah. You know, they make it easy.
But, I mean, think about how long it's taken me. 2 years almost to start doing this. I've had that, you know, a year and a half, 2 years, I've had that Apple Google TV in my living room.
Right.
So
right.
After a while, yeah, you know what? You're losing the money on the hardware, and that's not where your income's coming from. But after a while, if you're using the device, you are going to end up buying something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I think most people like that. But do you think they could compete in gaming? How would that work for them?
I don't, but I mean, you know, they have their Android app store on devices, right? App store for Android. And so I would assume it's going to be an extension of that, and that they are creating a platform that somehow will make sense in the living room, just like Apple's probably trying to do with some future Apple TV. And whether that takes the form of an actual controller uses a remote like Roku does, or maybe you use a mini tablet like a Kindle HDX or whatever. As the controller, I mean, who can say? But I don't know. I no one has really unlocked the code for the living room. I mean, we have got a couple of kind of minority players like Roku and Apple TVs and their Xbox, whatever. But none of these things have taken the world by storm in the same way that, say, like the iPad has with tablets or the iPhone has with phones or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, I can see why they're going to try, but I just don't see it.
Like, I'm looking at Ouya, for example, right? The Ouya is the, I guess, whatever would be closest to what this device will be. It's you know, indie games developed for them. Mm-hmm. It's $99.
You will never meet anyone that owns this.
I know one person. That's it. You know, and they never, I don't
sure
think they turned
okay.
it on.
I just, I don't know. You know, a small company like that, you know, selling in the thousands of units is probably okay. I mean, when you're a big company, I guess you could view it as an investment. But I think a company like Apple or Microsoft would look at that kind of opportunity and say, you know, this is never going to translate into anything that makes any sense for a company of that size.
I don't know. I mean, I don't. You're right. I don't know what the answer is for the living room. And we talk about that all the time. And Xbox to me seems to be the closest thing to a, you know, a powerful device in the living room that's giving you every possible option. But
yeah, but it's $500.
$500. Yeah, it's as much, you know, as a TV. Most people don't have a TV that much.
Yep.
So,
and by the way, when people do buy a TV and it comes with some little app thing, whether it's smart TV or something else, you know, for a lot of regular people, it's probably enough.
Oh, like the Netflix app.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to talk about the Xbox for a second with you, because I read an article that drove me insane. I think I sent it to you. But before we do that, let's talk about our sponsor, and that's Audible. Audible is a phenomenal platform. I use Audible all the time. Paul's on Audible all the time. My wife loves it. And so can you. You could try it out by going to audiblepodcast.com/Andrew, where you get a free audiobook. It's free, guys. Check it out. And Paul has a phenomenal pick this week. I think people really like your picks, and they hate mine, because I'll always get an email from people saying, like, I absolutely love it. I like what Paul picked, and it's never like I like what Andrew picked. So I've given up on the picks, and I'm just letting you pick the audiobook. So what's your pick this week?
This was this week the pick is Jaws, which you may know by the movie, which is by Peter Benchley, and I've only just started it. I grabbed this book with a bunch of other stuff. I think they had a sale before Christmas, and it was very inexpensive at the time, as were a bunch of the other things. I got a bunch of science fiction and some other stuff, but I just started this one. I finished the BMW book, I think we discussed last week. There's something really soothing. It's kind of a weird thing to say, but the guy who does the narration, Eric Steele, has got kind of a classic Audible narrator voice. And it's, I don't know, it reminds me of like audiobooks from a long time ago. It's got a real kind of classic quality to it. But it's not a very long book, which I actually really like these days. It's only about 9.5 hours long. I don't know if you can, I don't know. Can we even play part of it? Is it possible?
I don't have the audio hooked up to it.
So so check it out. This one, I've only started. I've heard that the book differs from the movie in some major ways, which I like. And I've also heard that this is a fantastic book, and it, you know, again, I've only gone through the beginning of it, but this one looks really good. You can sort of understand how something like this would be ideal for a movie, and of course, I think everyone's probably seen Jaws, so you get it. But
Excellent. And listen, if you're not into the book, they have over 150,000 downloadable titles across every type of literature, fiction, nonfiction, everything you could imagine. I've been a subscriber for years now. I mean, probably 6 years I've been an Audible subscriber. Probably Paul's been a subscriber for far longer. Do you remember what it was before it was Audible?
No.
Was it? Nope. They didn't have a different name, did they?
I don't know.
Huh. I'm trying to think. Because I've been with them.
I had audiobooks. I want to say were on cassette.
Because I want
to. As well, but no, I don't remember if Audible had a.
The first Audible book I ever had was Along Came a Spider.
Yeah.
And I want to say I got that in 1998. Yeah, because. Oh, yeah. It makes sense because they did digital audio in 97. They started doing it online. So, yeah, 98. So I've been using Audible for many, many years, and I've been a subscriber since 2009. So phenomenal. Great company, and they stand by us, and we stand by them. That's audible.com. audiblepodcast.com/Andrew. Get your free audiobook over there. Paul, I want to tell you about the time I lost my mind, and that was this morning. I'm looking for stuff to talk about today. I'm looking for topics to talk about, and just this, it bothered me. It bothered me so much, this title. Insider, Xbox One has no hope. Will lose this generation's console war to the PS4.
Wow. It sounds dire.
It is. It's the end.
I have no respect for that website. I just want to be really clear. And
I'm not even promoting the website. I'm not even going to say what it is.
No. I'm just going to throw that out as an aside. I was kind of going at it with somebody on Twitter last week, and it wasn't until we were about 17 messages in that I suddenly realized this guy writes. He writes for Business Insider. He's like one of these jerks, and you know. The kind of general comments that he had made about the site were kind of laughable, like, you know, like we write for normal people, you know, that kind of thing. And it's like, no, you really don't. It's designed to be controversial, you know. It's the type of thing like I sort of find myself involved with by mistake, where you say something direct and then people are like kind of burned by that. And so if you kind of scroll down their list of like tech headlines today, one of them is the iPhone 5C turned out to be a dud.
I saw that, yeah. You know,
which is a kind of a really, like, it's actually in this case probably true, but it's far from a dud. But it's designed to be inflammable, you know. And actually, they note the number of views that their articles get, and the little icon they use for that is a flame. You know? So it kind of tells you where their heads are at.
I mean, and
so
this is...
I just find this kind of thing. This is like our... It's portal. It's like business tabloid journalism. I mean,
it's so silly. Like, in this, he goes, Industry Insider, I'm not going to name the name. If you find the article, you could read it, but I'm not plugging these idiots. Who goes by the name blah, blah, blah on Twitter and video game forum user, Sony's PS4 is the clean winner of this generation's video game consoles. He also says that it'll continue to be the case for the entire console generation, according to his source, suggesting that Microsoft did not build its Xbox One with future in mind. That is the most insane thing I've ever heard. That the Xbox One is not built for the future.
Are we talking about the same website? This might be a different website.
This is the article where I'm talking about. Hold on. Let me just send this to you. There you go.
Is it in the notes? Let me see. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm talking about a different
site. Oh, you're talking about a different site. Okay. I mean,
this site's even worse.
Yeah.
So,
but they're quoting a guy online on Facebook that he's an industry insider.
Like, according to comments made on Twitter.
Yeah.
And in the forum of a website.
He continues to say the PS4 has more left in the tank and will start showing up.
Yeah.
We'll start showing. So, going up forward.
This is stupid. So let me just speak very generally, since we can all speak very generally about this stuff. This is exactly the kind of stuff that people were saying about the PS4, PS3, and the Xbox 360, right? when the PS3 came out with 1080p and this Xbox 360 only had 720p at the time, and they can never fix that, and they're never going to catch up. And once developers figure out the PS3's hardware, these things are going to take off, and it's going to be better, and yada, yada, yada. And the reality is that didn't happen. They added 1080p support to the Xbox 360, and you didn't have to buy a new console to get it. And the thing that really differentiates one console from the other is things like exclusive games and, you know, stuff like that. This is stuff people actually care about. Like this kind of technical argument that, you know, the GPU in the system has, you know, blah, 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 mega flips of something better and, you know, RAM and this, blah, blah. It's like, whatever. This is not how products are sold. It's not how people make decisions. This is how geeks talk.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. So this is a stupid article and a pointless exercise. But is it technically true that the PlayStation is 4 isn't superior to the Xbox One in some ways? You know, maybe. I don't know. It doesn't matter because that's not how this thing is going to be, you know, told. And so, you know, at the end of the day, at the end of this console generation, one of these consoles will sell more than the other. And the reason will have nothing to do with this kind of thing. This will have nothing to do with it.
So the guy also said that Call of Duty developer Infinity Ward asked Microsoft to allow the company's title Call of Duty Ghosts to access off limits of the Xbox One graphic processor, right, and that would have increased the performance by 8%. Microsoft reportedly refused.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, I think this is the stuff that drives me crazy. It's not even like, well, I like a PC, I like a Mac, right? Like, that's whatever you prefer.
It literally is that.
I guess so.
This is like the PowerPC processor used in the Mac, whatever, has 17% more floating point performance than the Intel processor. And so here's a funny video where we burn the guy in the bunny suit and everybody claps. And that didn't impact Mac sales versus PC sales and PC sales in the slightest. And, oh, by the way, they later adopted Intel. I mean, it's just the type of thing you do when all you care about is one side. You know, you're not really interested in, you know, some sort of nuanced discussion about whatever. I mean, there are all these discussions you could have around these consoles, why you might pick one over the other. If it basically boils down to, I'm kind of an Xbox guy. There's not much to say there if that's all you want to talk about. I mean, it's not worth even writing that, you know? So this is crazy. This story originated with a blog who picked this guy's comments up on Twitter, and the blog is called Dual Shockers, mm-hmm, which is an allusion to the Dual Shock controller used by the PlayStation.
Oh, not bias or anything, yeah.
I mean, I'm just saying, you know, like, isn't that what that is? I mean, am I missing something?
I really don't understand the cheerleading that goes on with companies and products. It drives me crazy because I don't understand why you feel so committed to cheerlead behind the product. They have no loyalty to you. So why is the consumer so loyal to one product?
It's not even that.
Apple's not loyal to its users.
You know, I know.
Apple's loyal to the money.
I don't care about that. That's one thing. I mean, I would like people to think for themselves. I have a number of articles I haven't published that are just in various places, you know. And I kind of go back to them every once in a while. There's one I've been meaning to write recently. It's hard to explain, which is the reason it hasn't been published yet, because I'm trying to think of some simple way to have this discussion. But it kind of touches on things like skeuomorphism and how Apple had this thing in iOS for a long time and they got rid of it, and now they have iOS 7 and it's really stark looking, and some people are like, you know, it's kind of weird and different. And it touches on the Windows Phone stuff because we had that before, and we had these integrated experiences in Windows Phone that kind of never went anywhere, and, you know, blah, 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 and all this kind of stuff. Anyway, in researching this stuff, I went back to look at some of the stuff I had written in the past about Windows Phone, because I know I had touched on this topic that these advantages that Windows Phone had, in this case in 2010, because this is the article I'm now looking at that I brought up because I was researching this, I see something that is very typical of what I would write, which is, I think from the outside, a lot of people think, oh, Paul, he's like a Windows guy. He's like really biased toward Microsoft, you know, obviously. Like, how could he ever write anything honest about Apple products or the PS4 or whatever? But The difference between me, and I can't speak for everybody in the world, but the difference between me and like the really partisan Apple baloney that is very typical for that world, or the video game world too, that you're just kind of highlighting here, is that I don't present that one-sided view. I am full of doubt about everything. I question everything. And in October 2010, I wrote an article called Hot or Not, where I went through all of the things that differentiate Windows Phone and did pros and cons about how this is good, but here's what's wrong with it. You know, like I think the primary difference, you can see this, Mary Jo and I, when we do Windows Weekly, there's doubt. We're not there to promote Microsoft. We're not there to cheerlead Microsoft. We're there just to be kind of honest about it. This issue, this PS4 has more left in the tank kind of thing, this is not an honest discussion. It's partisan technology bullshit, and I can't stand this kind of stuff.
And it just, I mean, these consoles were just released couple months ago.
I can't stand it. It's crazy. And I don't know. I just don't get it. If you want to exist to support people that use technology, and, you know, hey, a lot of people are using Apple technology now, so I'm going to do that. That's cool. But that's not what you see. You know, what you see is one-sided, really partisan, Apple always has to win, that's how we tell the story, or this kind of baloney. Like I look at the Xbox One and the PS4 as an actual user. And yeah, I am an Xbox guy. I've had an Xbox Live gamer tag since 2001, I think, or whatever. I want to fairly evaluate these things. I mean, the games are the same. Who cares? But the actual console capabilities to me are just better on the Xbox side.
I like the UI.
Are there mega flop differences on some chip somewhere in the silicon inside of the box? You know, maybe. I don't know. But they both perform really well. The games look beautiful on both of them. Yeah, I like the UI on the Xbox better. I just do. Sorry. You know, I like the fact that there were more entertainment apps on the Xbox One than there are on the PS4. Sorry. I like the fact that the Kinect actually works in this version and that you have to pay extra to get a camera that doesn't work on the PS4. Sorry. You know, like, I think those are all better things to discuss than this crap. Like, you know, this is just
let me just present this, Paul, and you know, we'll move on because we're probably boring everybody with
this is like a pet peeve of mine written.
Mine too, and it really bothers me because I think it's totally irresponsible, and I hate irresponsible journalism when you go and you tell the audience and you state your opinion as if it's a fact. And it drives me nuts when people do that.
All the time.
And people can never be wrong. I mean, that's just how it works. But with this, it seems like with this release especially, no matter what Microsoft has done, and I am not a Microsoft cheerleader in any sense. I'm not a fan of Windows 8. I've been vocal about that. But I do look at things realistically, and whatever works for me works for me. If you love Windows 8 and Metro works perfect for you, that is excellent that you found something that works for you. I'm not going to tell you that it's garbage or if it's crap. I could just tell you what doesn't work for me. And I think because, especially with the Xbox, that this device has the Microsoft name on it, there are people out there that want it to fail. If this device was put out by Sega, for example, right, or Nintendo, they would be praising this thing and it would be over for Sony. But because Microsoft is deemed as the big company, people want it to fail. And Sony's now the good guy. And it was the opposite when the Xbox came out. When the Xbox came out, the original Xbox, it was you know, there were those people, but it was they were the underdog. And, you know, good, put it to Sony. And now it's the opposite. It's crazy.
I mean, looking at just the companies, I had made this comment before the PS4 came out, you know, and everyone was cheering them on because they were winning all these PR wins, you know, post E3 and so forth. And I was like, guys, this is Sony. Like, they never get anything right. Are you kidding me? Like, this is the company that, you know, could have owned the MP3 player market and never did it, that made, you know, their stupid non-standard devices with crazy formats and DRM. And they own a music company and couldn't get that stuff integrated into stuff. You know, like, this is a company that just never got anything right. And, like, you're cheering them on, I think, because they're competing with Microsoft. I think that's why you are cheering them on. Not because they're Sony, but because, yeah, you can't stand Microsoft. I mean, I don't know. I just find it very odd. I just find that kind of thing very odd. You know, and I certainly suffered through a lot of it when I wrote about the PS4, because people who don't pay attention to your site are now paying attention to it because you're writing about their thing, you know, their little baby. And it's like, oh, look at this. You know, Microsoft guy. Oh, interesting. You know, and they don't really dig any deeper. I mean, there's nothing wrong with the PS4. I per se.
You just personally, you pick the Xbox. That's all.
Yeah. I mean, I think both of those devices are incredibly expensive. I get that the PS4 is less incredibly expensive.
Do you think the pricing is going to drop?
Oh, yeah, it has to, of course.
By $100 probably.
Yeah. I mean, this stuff will come down big time, I would say, this year.
So to kind of move on, actually, somebody asked this a couple of weeks ago, and I totally forgot. Do you expect there to be a revision to the style of the Xbox within the next year?
No, not in the next year. No. They need to recoup the investment on all this stuff. I mean, but one of the things that will occur over time is that they'll be able to combine multiple chips into single chips or have smaller versions of chips and so forth. And, you know, at first, those things will appear in the same box. And then over time, that box may be reevaluated and made into something that's, you know, thinner and smaller. You know, that's not going to happen this year.
Yeah. A couple more things that I wanted to talk to you. You know, you recently got a new car. We've been discussing cars apparently every week, and people are like, hey, why don't you guys do like a car tech show? Talk about what you use in the car. And honestly, the car technology that I use is like 1998. I have a Pioneer head unit in my car, and I got big speakers in the back, and that's it. I have a navigation system in my wife's, obviously, but my car is totally like 20 years old and into car technology. But I get excited when I see this, but I don't know how well it's going to work. Apple had announced iOS in the car in June.
Yep.
They had initially said it will be available on 2014 models. 2014 models are here. They're not available. And they just started showing demos of what it's going to look like. I'm hoping this thing is a success because I really, really want there to be a decent interface on these in-dash, you know, navigation systems that we're getting now, because the ones that we have now are absolutely awful.
So
how is it on yours?
It's non-existent. So the car that I have does not have an in-dash navigation system or a touchscreen of any kind.
Okay.
The model year that I got, that was an option. My particular vehicle doesn't have it. I couldn't care less about that. I mean, honestly, I think there's a baseline when it comes to technology in the car that is very useful to almost anybody. And that baseline includes, at the very least, Bluetooth kind of hands-free capabilities, where if you get a phone call, you can speak while you're driving and not be fiddling around with the phone in your hand. You know, I think that stuff's cool. My car has that. My wife's car has that too. I think the next step up from that, and I would also consider this kind of a baseline, is the Bluetooth, you know, based audio capabilities. I think that's neat to have. It's not for everybody. A lot of people could get by fine with some kind of an iPod or USB or mic in type adapter, whatever, headphone, you know, like the mini plug, whatever. I think that stuff's fine. But when you move up to this kind of thing, like an in-dash system.
Yeah, like I have it right now on the video. If you're watching, it's on the video. If you're not, I'm sorry. Just listen to Paul.
I think this is very useful and will be good for a lot of people. But I think the Google Android stuff this year that's happening, the Open Handset Alliance that they have, is going to result in, I think, the thing that everyone actually wants, which is Google Maps in your car. And I think that's where it's going to be at. And so I think this Apple thing will be beautiful. They always do a great job of this. But, you know, one of the things that luxury car makers like BMW and Mercedes have found, and actually Ford has found this too with the MyTouch, the Ford Sync stuff, is, you know, touchscreens are really cool and people love them. But when you're driving around, that's actually a really inefficient way to interact with something. And it takes your eyes off the road because, you know, when you you're touching something that doesn't have any kind of feedback for your fingers. And so a lot of these car companies are now making these devices that kind of sit where your hand naturally rests in the center console, and you can move around like kind of a joystick type thing or a dial or whatever.
Yeah, BMW does that, right?
Yeah, select on-screen items. And I think that this stuff is evolving. And the other issue is just that, you know, cars are not on the same schedule as technology. They're planned out years in advance. Yeah. So, you know, if you have an older car, you could go into a Best Buy or whatever kind of store you may have in your local area and find some sort of a unit that you could put into your dash that gives you the, you know, the radio and the disc playing and the MP3 compatibility.
You look like a 16-year-old that's speed racing.
Well, no, but the point is you can retrofit any vehicle now with those Bluetooth capabilities. You're not going to get like the in-dash navigation per se, but I think most people are pretty well served with smartphones and all that kind of stuff. And the other thing, I can't claim to use technology like everyone, and certainly this wouldn't help if you were alone in the car. But when I would actually need a GPS is maybe when we're going on a trip or we're away on a trip. And in that case, my wife is sitting next to me or someone will be sitting there. And I kind of prefer to have those people have their eyes on the map and help me get to where we're going, not to have me be the guy doing everything, which is probably the wrong way to do it in a car anyway.
I think this is something that, you know, like you said, the car technology is kind of backwards and they're a couple years behind. But like with the iOS in the car, you're just going to connect your phone to it and it's going to piggyback off of your phone. So it's not going to be integrated in the dash itself. It's not going to be running iOS.
That's interesting. And how about something that puts it up on the windscreen, you know, the windshield, kind of like a heads up display would be kind of cool too.
Yeah, the Corvettes have that, and they work really well. They've had it since 96, 97. They've had this head on display right in front of you. But to be able to connect it, I think that's great. You're letting Apple control the updates. You're letting them do all the work. You're just providing a dummy screen, and when you disconnect,
you're using your data plan, right?
To do
whatever has to happen there,
and that's fine. I'm okay with that. That's what I want. Like you said, the big story is Google. When will they start doing this? When will they?
Well, they just announced it, so soon.
So another 2 years.
No, I don't think it's going to be that. I don't think it's going to be that slow. I think the big issue is that we're going to have a bunch of different systems. So Microsoft tends to work with companies specifically, you know, Kia, Ford, and a couple of others, I think Fiat and maybe Nissan. Google signed up a bunch of car companies. Apple has signed up a bunch of car companies. And so you're going to see all these kind of different choices, and it's confusing. I mean, I think honestly, the technology choices you have to make when you buy a car are often among the most confusing. Like if you buy a Volkswagen, I know BMWs like this, like they have all these like wiring harnesses they can put in that expose different ways of doing things. You might get like a USB port or like a specific iPod/iPhone compatibility, or you could get the little mic in, or you could get some combination of those things, or you know, you get the Bluetooth stuff, I think is like the baseline.
Look at this one. This is a Bluetooth in-dash 249 Pioneer 6-inch. Oh, just a faceplate. It's just looking pretty. It's not real. Still has buttons. These things are hideous, a lot of them. Like the aftermarket ones?
Well, sure. I mean, there's no standards for this stuff. Plus, you don't have to look too hard at cars to understand that some vehicles have those kind of standard rectangular shapes of the radios. Sometimes the radio is like this part of a gigantic dash fixture that's, you know, all kinds of other stuff as well. So you can't always even replace what's in your car. It depends on what kind of system you have. But I don't know. You know, the old days, you would get like a navigation system and you could like order DVDs they would send you in the mail to update the system.
That's how mine is. I have a 2013 Infiniti and 2012 Infiniti, and that's what it's like. You, in order to update, right. I got a letter saying, hey, there's an update for the maps. Come to the dealership and we'll cut you a deal. It's $129 to update your map. Why would I do that? I mean, that's the most insane thing in the world, that you want to charge me $129 to update my map. It's nutty, really nutty. But I mean, that's the car industry. That's where we're at. But I'm excited to see them do this. And even if you're not using iOS, this is a very good look at where we are headed when it comes to in-car technology.
Yeah. I think that heads up display is going to be is going to help. I think the voice stuff is a good deal too. I mean, the problem, you know, you can be distracted in the car doing all kinds of stuff. We don't have to have iPhones and tablets to be distracted in the car or be chatting on, you know, texting or whatever. I mean, you could be distracted by a cup of coffee. You could be distracted when a bee flies in the window and, you know, you freak out. I mean, there's all kinds of things that could ruin a perfectly innocent car ride. But
see, I've used Sync. I don't like Sync, Ford Sync.
So there are different levels of it.
I've used the higher. I've never used like the entry one. I've used
I think the problems are out with the higher end version, and I've not used that. And it's been it's been years. But I did use the. I think it was just called Ford. It was called my Sync or Ford Sync, just Ford Sync, and then My Touch is like the next thing or something. I used Ford Sync; it was fine; it worked great. But I've used these built-in systems in a variety of cars too. It's not just the Ford stuff. I mean, a lot of them are just pretty okay; like they're fine, but I don't know. I can tell I'm getting so over this kind of stuff because I find myself almost resisting this kind of stuff because. I worry about something that can't be updated or isn't updated frequently or whatever, and I would hate to be stuck with like a 5-year-old car that has some kind of whatever in-dash entertainment thing they had back then that sort of knows about the first generation of iPhone and nothing else. I just find that stuff to be kind of tragic. So I like the sort of generic stuff that works well with different things because I use different kinds of phones and things, and if we're going to need navigation in a car – we use it on my wife's phone. We use Google Maps.
Yeah. Paul, before I wrap up, just a quick update on update 1 for 8.1.
Yeah.
What are we going to see?
So it's sort of like a half of what is in Windows 8.1. If you think about Windows 8.1 is what Microsoft was able to do in a year. Update 1 is like what they were able to do in 6 months, and it's not the full-blown set of features that we've been hearing are coming down the road, like the ability to run Metro apps in a window or the start menu coming back. But there's a bunch of little things that I think are going to make Windows better for different classes of users, especially desktop users with a mouse and keyboard that still feel kind of alienated. And so they're adding the ability to pin Metro apps to the taskbar on the desktop. They're adding right-click context menus to the start screen and to the app screen, which will work instead of the kind of, normally today we get those kind of Metro touch-based interfaces, even with a mouse, which aren't necessarily very elegant or efficient and so forth. And so it's that kind of thing. The ability to, there's a power button on the start screen, so because people complain they couldn't find the ability to shut down the computer, which makes me wonder why they need to shut down a computer. If you're running Windows 8.1, it seems like you shouldn't have to do that because it's all modern and stuff. But it's kind of a step down the path. I mean, I think the big question is going to be whether we see an update 2 or 3 or whatever over this year. And right now the answer to that is actually no, but that could change. Or whether we have this update and then the next thing that happens is Windows 9 next spring. But it's going to happen pretty quick. In fact, I didn't hear this directly, but I think Mary Jo was the source of this early March RTM availability. If you want it, you could get it over Windows Update, and then they'll make it like an important update, something that most people would get by April.
Why the option at first?
Well, that's how they tend to roll things out. They want the people who really want it to be able to get it. That tends to help them find if there are any problems. And before they kind of do the mass market, everyone gets it automatically as part of the standard monthly update. That way they'll know if there are any problems that escaped during testing.
I mean, it's not just like a service pack update. These are changes that they're putting into this thing.
Yeah, so the difference between this and a service pack is actually that. It's that there are features. And so in the old days, we would have called this like a feature pack. And we didn't really use the term feature pack all that much, but it was sort of an alternate to a service pack, which obviously is security updates or bug fixes and things like that, literally like a servicing update. This is more of a functional update. So it literally is, new features for the OS. And this will constitute the baseline of what is Windows going forward. So when a PC maker makes a new Windows 8.1 PC over the summer, it will be Windows 8.1 with Update 1. Like, it's not something the user will have to go get later. It will just be part of it.
Like, with certain features, like being able to pin the App Store on desktop, is that a way for them to kind of bridge the two interfaces and get people ready for Windows 9?
Well, it's yes. I mean, so obviously that feature's a little weird because today you can pin a desktop app to the start screen, right? Yeah. And when you do that, the whole start, you know, the whole desktop comes up and your app runs. It's a little strange. But they don't currently offer the ability to do the reverse, which is from the desktop, pin a Metro app down there. And so that adds that. But of course, when you run it, it's going to run full screen and take over the screen. You're not going to see the desktop anymore. So it's kind of a step. I had the thought the other day. I've talked a lot about how Windows 8.1, and I think you and I have talked about this, how Windows 8.1 is kind of successful in the sense that if you use a desktop computer, it kind of keeps away most of the Metro stuff. It gives you more of a pure desktop experience.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it does a much better job than 8.
And if you use Windows 8.1 on like a tablet computer, on the flip side, it also keeps you out of the desktop because a lot of those control panel type things are now just built into the Metro side too. So it's kind of nice for both types of users. But you know, the one thing that Windows 8.1 doesn't do is a better job of integrating those two sides into a more cohesive kind of single system. Like if you think about it, Windows 8.1 is still two very different operating systems. So they've made you made it possible for you to use one or the other more easily and skip one of them. But I think one of the goals over time, update one, Windows 9, and possibly up, you know, whatever, if they have an update 2, is going to be to ease the integration between the two environments too, because I think that's a big part of it. They realize, you know, the desktop's probably not going away anytime soon. You know, these things need to work together. It can't just be about ignoring the rest of it. You know, you don't want every person who uses Windows on a desktop to ignore Metro. You want them to experience it. So I think they have to improve the integration
there. Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's the right thing. You know, a lot of people are excited that desktop is getting a lot more support in the next version, but I don't necessarily think that that's right either. I think there needs to be an equal balance, and we kind of need to incorporate, you know, the new UI with the old UI and make it easier for future releases. You know, the more you integrate now, the easier it is when you, you know, kind of phase some stuff out.
I mean, if you're a desktop user like I am, and you know, to run, like to use the Mail app, you have to run this like thing full screen. It's terrible on this type of setup that I have. So I can't use that application. But if I could use it floating in a window with my other apps, all of a sudden that app becomes very interesting, right? And there's a lot of stuff that is in Windows 8.1 or just apps you could get through the store that you may want to run that way. And that apparently is not happening until Windows 9. But I really think that's a huge step because it makes this new thing more viable for so many more users. And I just think it's smart for them to integrate it that way. So,
talk about Windows 9. Anything new on that front?
On Windows 9?
Yeah.
No, actually, the past week or so, it's been a lot of 8.1 update 1 stuff. And, you know, the other thing that's happening concurrently with that is Windows Phone 8.1. And the interesting thing there is that, honestly, there haven't been many valid actual leaks of what's happening in Windows Phone 8.1. That thing is still kind of a black box. Like, it's going to happen at exactly the same time as update 1 for Windows 8.1.
And nothing.
But we really don't know much about it. And a lot of the stuff that has leaked has been bogus.
I mean, are they looking at time Windows Phone 9 along the same time frame for Windows 9?
So I don't know what they're going to call the Windows Phone version of that, but the threshold code name, which is used for Windows 9, also applies to Xbox One and to Windows Phone. So those things will all be updated in lockstep, but I don't know how they're going to brand it. And so, yeah, it makes sense. They might call it Windows.
I mean, that's perfect. They release these updates around the same time frame. That's exactly what they need to do to streamline everything.
Yeah, they need to get that stuff all in tandem, yeah.
Fun stuff, Paul. I love updates.
I like updates when they work.
Yeah.
You know,
I play the update game all the time with my Nintendo
Wii.
There
is a,
yeah. I turn my Wii U on and I just let it update and I just stare at the screen for 45 minutes letting that thing update and then I turn it right back off.
Yep.
That's all I do on it.
Sometimes, yeah. Half the activity I do on my, like, I have a lot of phones that I just do testing on is you kind of just turn it on. And these days, actually, it updates for you, but you just kind of look at what updated. And you're like, oh, yeah, look at that. It's up to date. You know.
Excellent. All right, Paul. Time to wrap it up. everybody, you go to our website, gfknetwork.com. If you miss any portion of the show, you can catch it archived there. It's also on winsupersite.com for all things Paul Theriot. You also post the show there. Paul, anything to... Oh, your book. Let's talk about your book.
Yeah. So, I'm trying to figure out where we are. Like, the book is kind of barreling toward completion. You know, not really complete, but to kind of the 1.0 release. And that would be the version that we put up for sale on Kindle and Nook stores and so forth. And we'll see how it goes from there. But it's over, I think it's 425 pages-ish and a couple of chapters left to go. But it's, you know, it's getting there. So if you head over to windows81book.com, you can buy it. It's only $2. You can spend less or more. It's up to you. But you can kind of follow along as we write it. So we're going to finish the, you know, that 1.0 version, but we'll keep updating it past there because, of course, you know, update one will happen and other changes too to the app. So we'll update it as things happen.
Excellent, Paul. That's it, guys. Subscribe to us. We're on iTunes. Wherever podcasts are available. You could check us out everywhere. Windows Phone, iPhone, Android, everywhere podcasts are available. And we'll see you all next week. Take care. Good night, everybody.